You're listening to episode 3 of Fear the Boots interview series. In this show, we talk with the author of the webcomic DM of the Rings, Seamus Young. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to the Fear the Boot interview series. My name is Dan, and with me on the mics is Chad.
Howdy.
And John.
Hey.
And today we are interviewing Seamus Young.
Hi there.
And Seamus is the author and artist, so to speak, behind the online comic, The DM of the Rings. And Seamus, I was wondering if you'd tell us just a little bit about what your comic is and why it's up there.
Basically, I take screen caps from the Lord of the Rings movies and put, you know, word bubbles over them, sort of defacing Peter Jackson's work for your amusement.
Excellent.
And the thrust of it is just, you know, what if the plot of the movie was actually players being railroaded through the plot of Lord of the Rings?
And then at the bottom of each, you give a little bit of sort of, I don't know, game mastering advice or more just stabbing parody, which is, that's the part that always cracks me up. But, you know, one of the things that I noticed as I was reading your comic, and the example that comes to mind is you had one, I believe it was fairly recently, where they were going into Isengard and they were talking about the characters of the movie, which in this case you're portraying as if they were players in an RPG, were trying to separate, I guess it was Isengard from
Orthanc?
It was Isengard and Edoras.
Yeah, they're trying
to
separate the two places and couldn't remember which was which. And finally they figured out kind of which one was Isengard, but their memory of it was completely wrong. And you made some comment at the end that the only thing worse in a game than having your players not remember your setting is to recite it back in a way that is so foreign to what you originally said that it's unrecognizable. And what I thought was interesting about that is how most gaming groups, despite maybe having some contact with each other through their local gaming shop or through the internet, are generally speaking pretty insular. That you and your buddies who have probably not gamed with a lot of other groups at some point in your lives, grab a book off your shelf or a book out of the gaming store or bookstore down the road and start playing. Yet these experiences all seem to come out the exact same.
Yeah, it is very strange how I just posted about my own experiences, and I'd see hundreds of people say, this is exactly like my group. And these are people playing different games. They're playing, you know, we're playing D&D 3.5, and they're playing Shadowrun.
Those poor souls.
Yeah, they're playing Shadowrun, and they're a bunch of people from Southern California. They've got a completely different goals and mindsets, and they're different ages, and yet we'll all have the same experience. Which is, you know, grief players and nobody remembers the plot.
So what is your gaming resume? What games do you own and play, and how long have you been gaming for?
Okay, I've been, the games that I've played are D&D 3.5, and that's it.
So it's more the game you've played.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I played my first campaign about 3 years ago, and I actually DM'd my first campaign.
Wow, that's dangerous.
So yeah, it is.
Which did you like better, playing or game mastering?
Oh, game mastering for sure. Mm-hmm. I loved it. Much preferred. Being a player was okay, but no, I love making stories and creating settings. That's what I love.
So what motivated you to actually take all these experiences, comedic and otherwise, and turn them into a comic?
You know, it was not really intentional. In fact, I never even intended for this comic to take off the way it has, and for me to make nearly 100 of them now. Originally, I got this comic book making software, and the purpose of the software is where you take like photographs and or screen caps or whatever and put little word bubbles, and the examples they give are like, take pictures of your dog and put word bubbles on them to make silly scenes and, you know, make e-cards out of them or something. And, you know, that didn't appeal to me at all, but I thought, boy, I would like to make a comic book. That sounds like fun. And so DM of the Rings was sort of just born out of the desire to make a comic book for its own sake.
When we were kicking some emails back and forth, you talked about how despite the good gaming advice you give, that you have some actually kind of bad GMing habits yourself, one of which is leading players around by the nose.
Well, I don't know if I'd put it that way. I am sort of a supporter of invisible railroading.
Everyone does it.
And I have many bad habits, but my worst habit is very bad railroading, but I have not been caught at it yet.
Excellent.
Well, then that's the comic best you wrote kind of role play
about railroading about Weathertop or whatever. When the character's like, okay, we want to go west, but there's this plateau over there that you can sleep on for the night. Well, we don't want to. Well, the ranger suggests that maybe you should, because it'll be warm up there. It's a higher altitude. I don't remember how you exactly phrase it, but
yeah, he said, well, no, it's better rest up there. And they said, well, if we need rest that bad, it's
yeah,
a big hill. And he's like, well, you're tired enough to climb the hill, but too tired to sleep anywhere else. Yeah. Lame justification for
awesome.
An absurd situation to put the players where you want them.
You know, I've got to observe that, you know, your gaming resume, so to speak, isn't that long or intense, but I got to say, your gaming advice is very good in your comic. It is very spot on.
I'm glad. because you know, like I said, my first campaign I was a DM, my third campaign I was a DM, and I had no idea how good or bad of a job. I have no idea if I sucked, or if it was any fun, or if these were terrible ideas, because, you know, that was the totality of my experience.
Did you, when you first started playing a couple years ago, did you get into a group with like a bunch of other people who had been playing for a long time, or did you just kind of get a whole bunch of new people together and just discover this on your own, or how did that work out?
Yeah, I hooked up with some guys who had started on their own just recently. They'd been playing for a few months, and their DM was, in their description, terrible. He was not as good as the DM in DM of the Rings.
Like,
if you imagine DM of the Rings, but without the epic plot that he's trying to force down your throat, that was this guy. And they were kind of frustrated with him, and they sort of just, you know, created excuses, left the game, and came to me. I can't even remember how I wound up running this game when all of them had more gaming experience than me. But
I was going to say, that guy has got to be pretty bad to go to somebody who does not game, has never gamed before, and said, please run our game. You could obviously do a better job.
There's a certain breed of perma player that might have roleplayed for 30 years, but will not put in the GM's chair if you pick a gun and put it to their head. We don't have very many of them in the Fear of the Boot groups. We have a couple, but I think they're out there. And I think there are clusters of 4 and 5 people that will try to pick a guy who's gamed for 2 weeks and tell them to run his game rather than volunteer themselves.
Well, you know, the advantage that the players within your comic had is at least the adventure module was written by Tolkien.
That's true.
Yeah.
As opposed to being thought up in the mind of Harry or Bob.
And it's great. The players making fun of that. They're like, oh, I bet this is just like the Green Dragon Inn. And there's this fat old guy. And oh, there he is. See, all these games are like that. And to be mocking the original from the 1930s as if it was the copy off is just so profane. I love it.
You know, when I got my start GMing, it was said on the podcast before that it was about back in like 1988, and it was running the Star Trek role-playing game, the version written by FASA, which is actually long out of production, even before FASA went bankrupt. It's been long out of production. And when I ran those games, I used to have fundamentally no idea how to control my players. And the way that I would keep them on track was actually far more vulgar than suggestions like there's a good place to sleep over here. We would actually have things like you are walking through an area and there are these impassable walls on either side
of
you.
The Box Canyon.
Or there is a forest that creatures walk within that you cannot defeat. And so you have to stay out of the forest and stick to the areas that I want you to stick in. And of course, this becomes bait to the players because the players sense weakness in a DM or a GM. And the first thing that they would try and do is to attempt to find any way possible. The whole plot of the game ceased being defeating the villain and started becoming trying to break their way out. And
oh, absolutely. The first rule of railroading is they must never see the rails.
What are some of the tricks that you employ to keep them from seeing the rails?
Okay, well, a good example a lot of people have gone through is if you think back to the BioWare games like Jade Empire and KOTOR.
Oh, I do frequently.
And where the game presents you with false choices. You'll sit there and you'll agonize over, oh, what answer? This guy's asked me this profound question. What answer do I give? and you'll agonize over it for, you know, a minute and a half before you finally give an answer. And then you play through the game the second time and you realize, wait a minute, no matter what I choose, it doesn't matter.
It's the old Dragon Warrior trick.
Complex flow
chart.
Will
thou marry me? No, but thou must. Wilt thou marry me? No, but thou must. She'll go on forever.
But basically present things that appear to be choices but don't go anywhere. Just like you said, that flow chart.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're constantly diverging, but the choices don't really matter.
Right.
And you can even use false choices to distract them from when they might leave. Hey, it looks like they're going to leave the rails. I'll present a conundrum, some moral dilemma for them to face. That, you know, I don't care which way they go. It doesn't affect the plot. But they'll agonize over it because it'll feel like it matters.
That's one of the great things about a role-playing game, is if as a GM you're clever enough to hold certain facts back, everything's movable. So if you hit this place where you want them to go east and they choose to go west, well, the city they were end up at anyway can suddenly end up to the west by a different
exactly. You know. Yes, exactly. If they have to go to the cities in a certain order, a bad railroader will make them go to the cities in that order. A good railroader will just move the cities to wherever they're going, as the plot requires.
So have you thought about taking any kind of next step? I mean, this comic's out there. I obviously have no idea what your web stats are, but I will say, as someone becoming more active within the gaming community, that your comic is certainly fairly well known and recognized. Have you thought about taking this any next step and doing something more with this?
Well, I really can't because the images are copyrighted. That's one of the things I've never been able to do. If I had known that this was going to take off, I might have chosen a different source of artwork or done something differently, because now I've got almost 100 comics now and I can't do anything which would...
Right. You can't publish them as a book or even a PDF or anything that would make any kind of profit.
Right. I have to be very careful not to profit for them. Not that I think, you know, Peter Jackson will unleash lawyers, but...
He certainly has.
Yeah, but that's not a risk. I don't want that kind of headache. And,
right.
And so I am sort of frustrated that the comic is pretty much all it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to do something that, you know, I could make bigger, I'd have to go and do something totally different.
Well, you do have creative credibility now on account of the comic.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it doesn't leap from the comic.
And also your site is pretty robust. I mean, that comic is just one part of a larger blog, and your blog is pretty in-depth about a number of different subjects, from your personal life to politics to anime to video games. Your anime section's huge. You appear to be a big fan.
Yeah, you know what? I am a big fan of anime, although I had to give it up when I started DM of the Rings. So.
Oh, really?
It displaced my anime habit.
Wow.
Does that comic really take up that much time?
Well, I don't have a lot of time. I'll put it that way.
Fair enough.
The comic doesn't take that much time, but I don't have that much to begin with. The site itself, just all those articles I write, eats up a good chunk of time and some of the other projects I have. So
what made you want to actually do a site like yours, which is basically, how would you describe your site? Like just a big blog site?
Oh, the original purpose of this blog was to transcribe the last campaign I played in. I took the whole campaign from our first session by session and kind of tried to make it into a story as much as possible. I couldn't, you know, really give it fiction flavor,
yeah,
but at least transcribe the events. That's all it was going to be, is like, here's what the group did this week. Here's who they killed. Here's what they discovered. Here's the plot that was revealed. And as I was doing that, I started writing about anime here and there and then video games, and then pretty much all this other stuff grew on top of that.
It's interesting, the interaction between someone who is known for something on the internet and the audience, because the audience only comes to know you through that one medium. And so it's easy for someone like me to say, hey, you know, you ought to do more than that comic, because of course I don't see anything you do other than that comic, and I have no idea about the family or the school or the job or whatever all these other things that you pursue are.
Yeah, I notice that all the time. People just imagine me as this guy, you know, just churning out comics every day.
You wake up and you're like, DM of the Rings.
Making millions of dollars doing it, and you have no other job. And so
yeah.
In the feedback you've gotten from this, you said that it's been your observation that surprisingly, as we said before, the gaming experience is fairly common. Have you gotten any like really unusual gaming stories or any really off the wall comments?
tons of them. I won't put down anybody's way of playing or way of role-playing, but some of them, I read their stories, and I am so glad I am not sitting at their table on Saturday nights. Just strange people that will deliberately kill one another's characters, or they're having sex with one another's characters. And how are you as a DM?
In that order?
You know, maybe. And how, I can just imagine it, trying to be a DM and mediate something like that. I'd run from the room screaming. You can't adapt the combat system for that sort of thing.
And you don't want to make a new system for it either.
Absolutely not. I don't even know what dice you would roll for that. Just imagine whatever happened. Let's go back into the dungeon.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. And I think as you game more and more with more and more people, you'll only see more of that. Yeah, I say that not to be depressing, but because it's true.
Yeah, I did realize that I have been very lucky in my gaming group. I've never had a really bad grief player. I've never had a real munchkin. You know, I've had some players bored with the story and some players bored with the combat and trying to balance between them, but I've never had any of the extremes that I see people describing.
John's actually seen something worse than that. You were in a game where somebody stabbed the DM.
I wasn't there, but I had heard of it. I was in a group in which this had happened.
Okay, this is in the LARP sense of him getting stabbed?
No. This is in the guy that he was DMing for or whatever really didn't have much of a life outside of Dragonland or wherever they were playing, and something happened to his character that he didn't like, and he just got so enraged that he flew off the handle and stabbed the dude with a pencil. I don't think it was a hospital inflicting injury, but
it was definitely a story that makes people like us look bad.
Yeah,
I don't know. Pencil was at least one die four, I think. Yeah. So.
This was like straight out of a Chick Tract or something. But
yeah. Someone's grandma heard about that, and now her grandkids can't play Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
So don't do that. You're destroying the hobby.
So given the attention that your comic is given, whether you want it or not, you now carry a mantle of having some impact upon the hobby. And I'm curious, have you hit the point yet where that's occurred to you? And if so, how are you responding to that?
Oh, wow. You know, that hadn't occurred to me until you just said it. But I have noticed that in the sense of influencing the hobby, I have noticed many people linking to me or leaving comments that are like, you know, I've never thought about this role-playing before, but it sounds like fun, which amazes me since the comic is about the horrors of role-playing. But they'll say, boy, it sounds like fun. I want to try it. And then, you know, they'll ask, how can I hook up? Where can I find other players? So in that sense, I'm glad I've had a positive, hopefully positive, it depends on who they meet up with, hopefully positive experience for some people in getting them into the game, which is probably the best sort of influence you can have.
Well, if they run only slightly modified versions of the Lord of the Rings, that's a good game. You brought the hobby
up. Any number of the D&D adventure modules.
Yes.
So if you were to move from a game from D&D 3.5 to another game, what would it be? Or do you have no interest? Are you happy where you're at and just don't?
Well, our group kind of broke apart because we all realized, you know, we want to try something else, and every single one of us wanted something different.
Ironically, we just got done recording an episode on this, not but half an hour ago, so I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah, they came to me, they bought the book for Star Wars, and I thought, all right, we'll do some Star Wars. And I actually wrote a short campaign for some Star Wars, and then they decided they wanted to play, I can't remember it now, but it's some other sort of sci-fi game, and then they all scattered to the winds, and so the group is gone now.
That sucks. Any new groups or desires for games on the horizon?
You know, no. I'd like to. That's what I was going to say. I'd like to once I get finished with this DM of the Rings. If I do it again, I'm going to want to DM again. And DM the way I do it. I don't know how other DMs do it, but when I do it, I invest quite a bit of time, you know, making
detailed maps. No two do it the same way.
Yeah.
I'm sure. But I make a lot of detailed maps and things like that. And so it's an investment of time. And so I wouldn't be able to do it while I'm carrying DM of the Rings.
That's fairly typical. Chad notwithstanding, most game masters tend to. Honestly, one of the first mistakes most game masters make is investing way too much time into all the backstory stuff, the maps and the languages and the places and the people that your characters either don't care about or won't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I started out, I would write for at least as long as I would eventually game. Now I write for about a quarter of the time that the session is going to be.
But going back to the railroading idea, it is an advantage when you do railroad, you waste a lot less. If they skip one dungeon, that is no problem. No problem. I'll just put that same dungeon. I'll replace all the kobolds with goblins. And, you know, and replace the dart traps with arrow traps and change the description. Instead of cave walls, it's, you know, a crypt or whatever. Mm. And there you go. It's the same thing, only different. And I didn't have to do any extra work.
I think that's the one advantage that the GM has, besides the fact that he is basically God in the universe, is that the players just don't know. They don't know what you have in store, and it could change from moment to moment.
Right. Going back to the KOTOR idea, you can only detect that sort of railroading when you play through the game more than once, and of course they can't do that. Mm-hmm. They can't go through. So you can change things all you want as long as you can always alter the unknown.
Right.
Saving yourself important work.
For the people at home that aren't familiar with your comic, what is the exact web address they need to go to check it out?
Okay, it's www.seamusyoung.com, and Seamus is spelled S-H-A-M-U-S-Y-O-U-N-G, and then /20-sided-tale.
I definitely recommend this. This is a great one, and the advice that he gives is very, very much in line with the kind of stuff we say on this show, which is one of the reasons after we started checking his comic out, we were all like, we got to get this guy on the show, because, I mean, it's the kind of stuff he's saying is very much in line with the sort of advice we give. If you were to describe yourself as a DM and describe your style, if we kind of look at that continuum of power gaming on one end and full LARPing on the other end and maybe sort of a seated storytelling in the middle, what kind of games do you prefer to run?
Well, having not run any of the other types of games, I'm not sure where I could put myself on that continuum. I certainly don't run a high power gaming type of campaign. You know, it is not about fighting the biggest, baddest monster and cranking your stats up through the roof. That's fine. But if we want to do that, we could always, you know, start up a game of Diablo.
Yes.
I've got a land here, and we can do that if you guys want. But I assume if we're playing D&D, it's because we want an epic story. We want a story where it has an epic storyline where the players are the central heroes, where they're the stars of the story, and anything that advances the goal of making them the center of a great story is where I want it to go.
That sounds like a pretty good place to be.
Number one piece of advice, as you look through the comics you've written and the responses you've gotten, if you had just one piece of advice to give to most game masters out there, what would it be?
Never let them see you cheat.
That is a good piece of advice.
Really, I would say the chief thing is never forget it's about the players. Mm-hmm. I mean, the story exists for them, and it should never, if it ever becomes about an NPC or too much about an artifact within the game, if it's, you know, the bad guy's awesome sword against the awesome sword you've given them, then it's basically about the artifacts. You never want it to be about the things in the game world. It should always be about them and how they affect the world.
I completely 100% agree with you. That's a theme that I notice that runs through the comic. There's two, I mean, there's a lot of different things you talk about, but the two main themes, it seems to me, is one is the bad GM who railroads his players, and the other one is having that one NPC who does everything for the players while the players sit there and go, ooh, wow, he's so cool. I'm just sitting here doing nothing.
If you have always GM'd, I'm curious, what do you base a lot of this on, particularly your bad GMing advice? I mean, like the comic that I was talking about earlier, I believe they're referring to Gandalf as Mr. Plot Exposition. And if you've been GMing through most of your playing career, I'm curious, what have you, because it is so dead on. It is just so perfectly dead on. I'm curious what you've based it on.
Well, I have been interested in running role-playing games for a long time, and I read forums, I read people's posts, I read about other people's experience in the game. And actually, my first experience with the game was in junior high. Now, I didn't play. I just watched a game. They played it in the library in school every morning. And that was my first contact with DM. And this was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. I always hoped that, you know, I could join this game, but they didn't even know me. I was just some strange kid who showed up every morning to watch them play. And it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. And
This is why we don't game in gaming shops. So.
Yeah, yeah. Creepers like you show up.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get some weirdo who just sits there and watches you, and you don't know if he's just looking for good advice or if he's going to stab you with a pencil.
That's amazing, because you're the guy who was creeping out the weirdos who play D&D in the school library. That is awesome.
Wow. That's a powerful
decision. What would creep out you, dude? Cthulhu? Maybe not.
But yeah, so I've been reading about the hobby. Even though I didn't play, I do read about it once in a while, and I was familiar with a lot of the cliches and a lot of the trials that players go through. And some of it you can extrapolate. And, mm-hmm. and some of it, you know, I made some of these mistakes, never as big as in DM of the Rings. I never made those grand mistakes, but in some ways I am just lampooning my own early missteps on a grander scale.
Now, to bring up something creepy myself, because I know this is creepy because people find out about us through our show, and then they come to us saying, oh, well, you're like this, and we're like, I don't even know you. How do you know I'm like this? And it's like, oh, well, wait, you know, because I've said it in a public forum. But I've been around your blog, and I read your bio, and it said that you were a pretty insular person. You're very shy. Talks about how, you know, you work out of your home and then you spend a lot of time in your home. You're not necessarily agoraphobic, but you just, you know, you don't, how can I put this kindly, you don't get out much, so to speak.
You know, that's a fair way to put it. I don't take any offense at that particular. It's very true. I'm sitting in the same chair. I worked today in this chair. I worked on DM of the Rings today in this chair. And now I'm doing this interview in this chair. So
it must be a pretty comfortable chair.
I'm glad it is. This is money well spent. But yeah, when we say you don't get out much, you could even say I don't get out of this particular room much.
So you're a person who doesn't get out much. How is it that you came about to get a gaming group and get out and play with these people? I mean, how did you find these people?
To be fair, they came here. So I sat in this chair when I ran the session.
Were they like, wow, that guy never moves. No, he must be a dork. Let's get him to DM.
That's awesome. You will come to me for my greatness.
Yeah. And I don't want to say this in a way that sounds arrogant, but I do seem to attract people. Mm-hmm. You know, I do sort of collect people that come here and spend time at my place. Well, I do have kind of the ideal place for a meeting. Mm-hmm. For if you want a role playing group, this is
a if you're going to spend all your time in your home, you might as well make it a really cool home and a comfortable space.
Right. And the room has, you know, a LAN. So we got into it. I met these guys.
Nice.
Yeah. So they could come over here and LAN game with me. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have to drag computers with them because I already had several. And two of the players were brothers of mine. So, and they do get out. I'm the weird brother. And so they brought the people to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Actually, our history is kind of the same thing because, Chad has fished up most of the new players that our group has ever had. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm the type of guy, I sit back, I was always the GM, I hate people in general.
Amazingly, he does. It's
everyone assumes that because of the fact that I talk a lot on the podcast, that therefore I'm this really social and outgoing person. In fact, I'm not. I really don't talk to people in general. But Chad has no problem with any of this. And he just walks up to strangers on the street, goes down to the bus station and finds us new players and hits the prisons and wherever he's
going. You go where the people are.
Yeah. That's the true story. I mean, I met Adam right away at work, which meant I met Chad right away at work, which meant I learned about gaming groups, and here I am.
I guess shy people need outgoing people.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Everybody needs somebody.
I got to say that, you know, as an outgoing person, people who are shy and introverted like Dan and like yourself, I find absolutely fascinating. I guess there's just, you know, you don't talk, so there's something mysterious going on. When in reality, there's probably nothing going on, but it's so mysterious and cool.
I really can kill people with mind beams.
I do it. That's so cool.
If you watch me long enough, you'll learn how.
It is true, and people tend to gravitate to you when you're not always out there with everybody else.
You know, I talk all the time. I don't want to find somebody who talks all the time. They'll interrupt me too much. I got to find a quiet guy.
But I think quiet guys like us are the ones who start strange cults. So,
or gaming groups, or online webcomics, or podcasts.
Strange cults or gaming groups?
Mm-hmm. I don't know that you need to draw a distinction between those things.
Neither do I.
They're They're all just social interaction. There's just a different level of legality involved.
That's right. And, you know, cults don't get to have these cool dice.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I think I'd much rather be in a gaming group gaming about cults than actually being in a cult.
There isn't it.
All right, so you're D&D 3.5 GM primarily, well, only so far. So
you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
We have to ask the defining question about your GM-hood, which should not be a defining question, but probably is. Favorite monster?
You know, I made up a lot of my own monsters just because of the setting. I created this world where I had some low-level players, and I created a world where most of the typical foes had been annihilated. And I didn't see anything in the monster manual that I really liked. You know, I'd page through and I'd see, what, gelatinous cubes, dimensional grabbers, what the hell kind of campaign?
Wait, you don't like the gelatinous cube?
Like, you know, that's fine. If you have gelatinous cube, that's cool. There's no wrong way to play this game.
They're everywhere.
No, they're
in my refrigerator.
No. But there are wrong ways to play this game.
But I was trying to run a kind of low magic campaign. Just for what I said earlier, just so that it could be about the players. You know, there is not a wizard on every street corner. And so when I toned it kind of down, I had to turn down the monsters. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't make sense to have this low magic world where the wilderness is just filled with freaks and strange creatures.
You know, I absolutely agree with you. To me, a fantasy setting, there's nothing fantastic about tripping over magical items as you walk down the street. There's exactly. Nothing fantastic about going through the woods and you don't encounter a wolf or a rabbit or a squirrel, but you encounter, you know, tentacled blink dogs every 5 feet.
Yeah, it is. And you wonder, how do the other people that aren't adventurers survive in this world?
No kidding.
Well, there's a starting town around which things are relatively safe, and as you go farther away, it gets more dangerous.
It's just this one town swarming.
It's at the nexus of safety.
It's like when you play Contra and you wonder, how does this guy get back to his office every morning?
Yeah.
He can't walk left.
You know, one of the reasons that... One of the reasons that I've always created a lot of my own monsters in my games as well is not just to suit the feel of the world, but also because it helps keep up the mystery. Because you get people, particularly that have been playing games for a long time, and if you even just you try to be clever and describe in the vaguest terms some well-established monster, they instantly know what it is, and they instantly know what its panic buttons and weaknesses are. And so I have always resorted to creating my own monster simply because it keeps the players guessing.
Yeah. And they don't even have to be new in the sense that you come up with all new stats for them. They just, you call them something different and describe it different and they won't know.
You know, I did that stats when 3.0 first came out. It was about when I started my new gaming group. And that's one of the things that I did in the very first book, the Player's Handbook, or maybe it was the GM's Guide. In back, they gave a sample monstrous manual with like maybe five monsters in it.
Player's Handbook.
I just reframed each of the monsters over and over and over again. My guys fought tons of well, actually, they didn't do much fighting because I don't really run that kind of game.
There were tons of gelatinous dodecahedrons.
There were like skeleton after skeleton, but none of them, they never fought a skeleton once. They just fought the same stats. But that's also because I'm lazy and I don't like numbers, but that's just me.
Yeah. In my campaign, one of the things they fought was a grave walker, which was basically a zombie, you know, with slightly tweaks. It ran fast. It was like a fast zombie. It was like, you know, 28 days later, speed zombie. And, oh, it's a new monster. I've invented a new monster. No, it's the same monster. Everybody's already fought 1,000 times.
Yep. They just don't know.
I made a goo monster in my last game, and my characters could not figure out whether it was a black pudding or a gelatinous cube. And it was neither. But they were crapping themselves with the monstrous manual in hand, wondering why this thing didn't behave like a black pudding or a gelatinous cube. And you could do that, because you're the DM.
How does an amorphous cube made of slime, how does it retain its cube shape? Is there just lots of cornstarch in it or something?
Willpower. It's determined.
Maybe it has a square-shaped hole that it lives in.
That's true. And he has to return to his cube-shaped hole. Otherwise, he'll, you know, start to lose form after a certain amount of time.
And it'll just be a big puddle.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a pretty deep monster. I might play that in my next game.
The A gelatinous puddle.
So what do you mean play that? You mean as a character?
Oh, yeah, totally as a character.
Oh, yeah, we play all characters all the time that are like warp dogs and gelatinous cubes and Aarakocras. Well, no, that's too tame.
Your alignment is low viscosity.
Yes. All right, guys, it's dinosaur time. Roll D12. You're a Cephalophilus.
All right, so we've talked about GMing issues. Let's move on to the other side of the table and start talking about player issues. At your own table, or if you don't want to finger anyone at your own table, you can just say you got this in an email. What's some of the worst horrors you have seen unleashed upon a game by a player, either during play or during character creation?
I've never seen anything really that horrible. I've been so lucky in that my players, and I'm not just saying this, my players have been pretty great. I didn't even appreciate them that much until I...
Until you lost them?
That's so sad.
Until I lost them, and until I started reading the ridiculous stories of other people, how they would horribly butcher one another for the most trivial things.
Mm-hmm. Well, my characters kill other characters with some degree of frequency, but I think it can be justified.
Well, I think it's a gaming style. You have people who run games that are competitive type games, and then you have people who don't. You know, like it sounds like yourself. Your players, you don't want them competing with each other and such. And yeah, that's
absolutely, absolutely not. And in fact, I kind of made that obviously clear that, you know, we have to start this with the conceit that we're working together. I don't care what alignments you guys pick. You got to get along. You could disagree on which way to go, but we're never going to have this Aragorn and Legolas, you know, square off to kill each other kind of thing.
I am completely with you on that one. There's some difference of opinion even amongst the hosts on a wide variety of issues, but on this one, I'm definitely with you on that. I think some degree of conflict creates interesting RP and adds to the game. But when you hit the level of infighting, where there's murder and theft and all this other stuff.
Oh, that's when it gets good.
No, how this always ends is the players are mad at each other.
Yeah, you have some people having fun at the expense of others, and that's no way for anybody to enjoy the game.
I don't know.
I don't know about that.
I think that it's kind of like a practical joke. A practical joke is funny if everybody's in on it, including the guy who's getting the joke played on him, and he finds it funny too.
Yes.
But and this is the problem that we had in our group, is that all the players were in on it, except one person who wasn't, and they didn't want to be a part of it, but that causes friction. But we've had games where we've had people compete, and they've been at odds for each other, and the natural outcome, and it has to be a natural RP outcome,
absolutely,
would be violence, not anything in-game, not anything that's metagame or anything like that. But it has to be this RP outcome of violence, and it's cool. Both players wanted it, all the players wanted it, and it was interesting to see the outcome of it, and then to see how the other players would react to that. I mean, it to us, to John and myself, it's a level of realism, and a sort of gritty, dirty realism, mm-hmm, but a
or
realism
even
one
a license you give your character to say, okay, I'm really going to entrust you with this much of the plot, and tread carefully, because it matters which step you take.
But you know what? I mean, it's not for everybody.
No, it's not.
It's definitely
right.
Not.
Well, the thing that I would wonder is, what do you do? Okay, he's dead. Now you've got a guy sitting across the table from you who doesn't have a character.
Well, I've been killed mid-campaign before, and they find new characters for me. Like a Battletech game.
Oh, like
one
they
time.
Walk away from this battle, and they walk away from killing him, and, you know, they get done taking his possessions.
Right. Stripping him, stealing his boots, seeing if he has fillings.
They walk 10 steps and there's somebody by the side of the road. Hey, what's up?
He's got we used to joke about that. We said that, that guy has the big old P stamped on his forehead for player. And you're like, oh, that guy. Oh, yeah, come on. I trust you completely with my life and back and my possessions, and here, hold some of the party gold. You know, it does not work like that. No, it's awful.
The GM has to be subtle but forceful in slipping a very convenient player role into the edge of the campaign for the disembodied spirit of your player to occupy upon death. And Chad has done that for me before in the multiple occasions in which my player has been killed by another character.
Yeah. A lot of time there's a character, like, we know this is brewing, and there's a character waiting in the wings, or you slip into an NPC that you like, and that's right. But again, I'll definitely stress, it's a style, and it's not for everyone.
And you shouldn't do it every game, even if you do like it.
Yeah, because it can turn bad, you know, you have to watch that. So, but yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. It definitely can turn bad.
You have participated in a Fear the Boot host argument. Congratulations. You are now part of the tribe.
Wow. But who won?
Well, no one won.
Nobody ever wins these things. No one wins.
No, we got to stay until we have consensus.
Oh, no.
Buddy, how are the next 2 weeks looking for you?
I don't think your chair is that comfortable.
No, it is.
So, Seamus, you mentioned that as you were getting ready for this interview, you listened to some of our back episodes and had places where you wanted to jump in. So here's your chance. You have the mic. Jump in.
Oh, wow. So... You think I remember those moments?
Do you want to criticize us for our absolute hatred of Shadowrun? Do you want to
say... No, you know, I wasn't even aware of your hatred of Shadowrun, and, you know, I don't feel one way or the other about it because I've never played it. I like Cyberpunk itself.
Mm-hmm. You'll hate Shadowrun, because you care.
This is Chad and John. I like Shadowrun. Yeah. I enjoy it a lot.
How do you like bards?
Me?
Yes, you...
We've never had a bard in our campaign.
Oh my god, I'm so jealous. But you would hate them if one showed up.
The rest of my players would be naturally disposed to not like the bards.
Dude, you don't know what you got.
We did have a bard. We did have a bard in our first
campaign. Totally forgettable.
No, he didn't live long.
Yes! Did you kill him yourself?
No. What happened was one of the characters was an orc. Half-orc, I'm sorry. And so I introduced a paladin who obviously wanted to rid
racist
the world of this...
bastard.
Yeah, and he wanted to rid the world of this abomination, and one of the members of his party was a bard. And in fact, the townspeople loved this paladin, so they had to get rid of this paladin away from town. Because he was coming to kill them. And the first one that they killed him very gruesomely.
Ooh.
Well, actually, when that particular group of this adventuring party come to kill them arrived in town, they tried to talk to this paladin, and I didn't have any text prepared for him. I didn't imagine that they'd try and talk to this guy, so I said, oh well, you know, he thinks you're just another peasant, come to greet him, and he shoves a couple of coppers in your hand and keeps walking like he's just giving out money. And that was a grave insult. So later, when they got a hold of his bard, they stuffed those coppers in his mouth and then cut off his head.
Ooh, wow. So this wasn't a player character. This was a grisly executed NPC.
Yeah. And I did describe him as good looking, smooth. I mean, I gave him like every reason to like this guy, except that he was on the other side, and they were buying.
Rule number one, if he's on the other side, he's dead. Were these evil player characters, or did they just...
No, they were good. They're all good.
Was this Bard a good character?
You know, he thought of himself as good. He really thought that orcs were an evil abomination or half-orcs that needed to be purged from the world. So they were basically both good. They just disagreed on what the world should do with the half-orcs.
Wow, murderously disagreed.
Yes.
Yeah, well...
You know, it's a tough world. You got to roll with the punches.
It makes the floor of Congress much more interesting if this played out in the real world.
I actually like that, where you have these two sides that are both... Because evil, pure evil, is not always a very interesting villain. But a misguided good or overzealous good can be a fascinating antagonist.
That's one of the things we've talked about repeatedly on this show, is the fact that sometimes within a story, pure evil has a context. But generally speaking, having stories where it's much harder to tell who's wearing the white hats and who's wearing the black hats is far more compelling, where you may have a side you sympathize with or a side that when the story begins, you are dumped into. But generally speaking, if you really step back, everybody kind of has a point.
Right. Everybody sees themselves as good. Nobody's really trying to conquer. They just really want their way.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them want you dead if you don't want their way too.
And not even that they want you dead. There was the other players in the group that they killed this guy, and he even said to them, look, you know, I don't have anything against you guys. You know, I'm just here for your orc.
I just want to kill your friend.
Hand over the
exactly,
orc.
Exactly. But in his mind, he couldn't imagine that they were really friends with a half-orc. I mean, it was an animal to him, and he couldn't imagine that they were really friends with it. In much the same way that you had a pit bull. And he's like, look, I'm just here to put your pit bull down.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's how he viewed it. And they felt differently. And they expressed that.
So when you write the plots for your games, what kinds of things do you draw inspiration from?
video games, I swipe from Tolkien. I swipe from not so that you could see. You know,
right. Like, no, of course badly, not.
You're playing D&D. You're swiping from Tolkien.
Yeah, exactly. You can't not steal from Tolkien, but you know that more low-key fantasy, like we talked about earlier, it's not filled with fantastical tentacle creatures, but more of a low-key Middle Ages with a little dash of magic world. And, you know, and I'll draw from various stories and situations. I pulled a lot from everything that BioWare's pulled out. I'll see a little ethical conundrum that the game presents, and I'll take that and expand it.
A little ethical, you know, conundrum, like the meat bags are still moving.
Well, like the one that where they captured this bard and had to decide what they wanted to do with this guy who meant them no harm except he wanted to kill their friend. Mm-hmm. And he's otherwise a good guy. And I really hoped that they would agonize over it a little more.
Yeah, those NPCs don't have souls.
Yeah. And they also killed their little halfling thief, too.
Well, they
and
they did.
Well, they did feel bad about that. They said, well, he tried to take their horses while they were cutting off that guy's head. He
tried
upstairs.
To take their horses? Oh, no. Hang them high.
Yeah, the halfling was just running off their horses so that they'd have to go on foot, and they caught him at it, and they killed him, and then they felt bad.
He exploded in a shower of tarts, as all halflings do when they're crushed, which is the only way to kill them.
I'll get no sympathy from me, man. I'm a firm believer that anyone who plays the little people thief, halfling, gnome, kender, instant right to murder.
Yeah.
And I'm generally against any kind of infighting unless someone busts out the little people thief.
That's just because in one game I just annoyed the ever living hell out of you.
Every game anyone plays that kind of character. They just play someone who's instantly irritating and out to undermine the party.
Yeah, nobody wants to play a Bilbo-style thief. Everybody wants to play this awful backstabbing.
Really? Would you consider Bilbo a thief? Not to get too much into the D20 levels and definitions, but is he a thief or is he like a first-level layabout town who just got railroaded?
He's almost a commoner, really.
Yeah, he probably has a couple levels of commoner, but yeah, he did swipe that one thing.
That's true.
I don't know how much stealing do you have to do before you're a thief? I don't know. You could even argue that he was swindled the ring out of Gaul.
He certainly did.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's two things that he stole now. Mm-hmm. So,
wait, what was the first one?
Well, there's the ring, and then he stole that thing from Smaug at the end. I can't remember
what it was. The Arkenstone? Or did he not steal that? Well, they collectively stole Smaug's hoard by murdering him, or rather outsourcing his murder and then claiming the treasure. But, you know, they're dwarves. They're clever like that.
You know, they understand the true goal. The true goal is not to be the hero who kills the dragon. It's to be the dwarf who gets the dragon's gold.
Yes.
Yeah.
I tell you, I know we commented on this earlier, but just it fascinates me sitting here talking to you that given the kinds of insight you have, I would swear you had been gaming for 15 years.
On a variety of systems,
yeah,
tons of
different groups and all. It just still blows me away that you're all, like, three campaigns into your gaming career, and yet you've already seen the ends of the horror that mankind can unleash upon the gaming table.
I don't know how that happened. I can't offer an explanation for it.
Natural-born gamer.
That's right.
I guess.
You rolled out of the character creator with the ranks of gaming skills.
Well, I gotta tell you, man, you're not gaming now. That's an absolute waste to the hobby. You gotta get back in the game. Definitely.
Yeah, I want to play one of your D&D games.
I want some players. I just gotta find myself some players. I can't go to the train station and recruit people like you do.
Where the people are, though.
I need to get a recruiter. That's what I need, is somebody out there and get a bunch of strange people to come into my house and try and kill each other in the context of a game and stab me with a pencil.
Seamus, let's go ahead and let's give that web address one more time, and then just to make sure people have it. It's Seamus Young, spelled Shamus YOUNG.com / 20-sided tale, TALE. And once again, we will have this linked as well in the show notes. So if you guys want to check out Seamus's comic, which I highly recommend, it's a great comic.
Yeah, I went to these guys, somebody linked it on the forums, and then I read one, and I read every single one after that. And I go to the guy, I'm like, you guys got to read those, and they were like, I don't know, I don't really like webcom, I don't know. I'm like, no,
I wasn't,
you will
like,
read
I don't
it.
Know. I jumped right on that.
We even said it in that little Muppet voice Chad just used.
That's right.
Right there.
That's right. It's amazing. They do that voice all the time.
Every time we disagree with him, we turn into Beaker. Except for Dan, who is, of course, Dr. Bunsen Honeydew.
That's right.
Indeed.
Well, if you're curious more about my campaigns, I've only put one of them online, but you can read the third campaign that I ran, you know, in total. Mm-hmm. If you go to the site and you look on the right sidebar, there's a link under category that says D&D campaign.
You know what's absolutely killing me is that I was hitting your site throughout the day wondering if you were going to release the next comic, and I never saw it while I was at work. And now I'm sitting here, and Dan's on your site, and I see the new comic, and I can't read it yet until this is over.
You have a character named Thufir. You read Dune, didn't you?
It's not that funny. You're not missing anything this time.
No, I still want to read it.
That's what I say about them all. This one's not that funny. Yeah, last week was awesome, but this one sucks.
I see nothing but Pippin looking especially light in his loafers, and I think, wow.
I remember one comment you made. You said that you had trouble doing the exposition of the story and telling a joke at the same time.
And in fact, I'm struggling more with that in Return of the King now. The other secret, which I will reveal on your show, is that these are not nearly as current as they seem. Mm-hmm. This one that you're reading today, I wrote weeks ago, many weeks ago. I'm several weeks ahead.
That's usually a good idea. To do that.
I need to do that. Mm-hmm. I need to do that. That lets me, I'll let a joke sit there for a while and I'll realize, no, that one really does suck. And I need to kill that joke and replace it. Like, I just finished comic 103, mm-hmm. and here we are. I just put 94 up today.
So at what point of the story are you on?
I am, secret. comic 103, Aragorn's in his tent, and the DM's trying to describe to him the paths of the dead.
Ah.
And of course, Aragorn cannot comprehend this because he doesn't know anything about his own character.
You know, working that far ahead is fairly common within the industry. We actually recorded our half of the interview about a month and a half ago, but you're fitting into it perfectly. So.
Yeah, good job. Oh, good.
Well, I'm going to have to ask you the next logical question here, and one that I'm pretty sure I've seen people ask you before in the comments section under your comic. What's the next step when you are, because Lord of the Rings comes to an end? What do you plan on doing after that? Do you plan on doing another comic or not?
Right now I don't have anything in mind. Mm-hmm. So it all hinges on whether or not I have another brilliant idea, which nothing so far. Hmm. So it may end. It may just totally end and the story will be finished. I do plan on putting out a PDF when it's all over. And I do have four or five comics that I scrapped.
Mm-hmm.
That I'll put in there is like deleted scenes.
Yeah.
But that's basically it when this is done.
Seamus, thank you once again for joining us for this interview. It's been great talking to you. I mean, this has been, I realize that you, just like we, don't carry the same name recognition as someone like Ryan Dancy. But I got to say, this has been a fantastic interview.
Yeah, it has.
Really enjoyable.
Thanks for having me on. This was a blast, really. I loved it.
It's really neat because I consider myself a fan of your comic. It's really good to talk to the creator of something that I'm a fan of. It's the first time I've been able to do that. So thank you for that.
Thank you. It's nice to finally be able to interrupt when I hear something on the show.
You've got to be forceful, though, if you want to derail particularly Chad. Yeah, well, so.
Take that as precedent,
listeners. I've been doing it on the pre-recorded shows, and it just wasn't satisfying.
No matter how much you yell on the pre-recorded show, we just don't stop for some reason.
You have to amuse us with a webcomic for 100 issues if you want to get on and yell at us in real time. Or sell TSR.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well, thank you, Seamus, and we will catch the rest of you guys on the next interview.
Thank you.
This interview has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com.